Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour, an editorial review, is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. Now, stay tuned for tonight's special report on diabetes when we come back. Are you concerned about your privacy? Well, just how much does your government know about you anyway, and how much do you want your government to know about you? Well, government only knows as much about you as you tell them about yourself, because everything that government, industry, or business knows about you is because you told them. That's right, you told them. Now, the Fourth Amendment protects you when your person houses papers and effects, but it doesn't protect you from yourself. Now, can you and I have privacy in the computer age? Well, you bet we can. Information about us is gathered and stored in a very reasoned and very logical manner for later retrieval and use. It's knowing how this information is gathered and what information is being stored and what information you and I want to keep personal and private that actually puts you and me into the driver's seat in our quest for privacy. Now, always keep in mind that no one knows anything about you that you have not revealed by your own hand or by your own mouth. Now, if you'd like to learn more about privacy and privacy issues, why don't you call and ask for our free general law CD package? That's a four-hour program. It's entertaining, it's informative, it's educational. Best of all, it's free. Just call the school at area code 417-273-4967 to order yours. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. If you're online, you can go to the webpage. That's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send an email request for your free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. Well, diabetes is one of the most challenging health problems in the 21st century. Some 194 million, that's nearly 200 million people worldwide, have been diagnosed with diabetes. It's now one of the most common non-communicable diseases around the world. Diabetes is the fourth leading cause of disease and death in most developed countries, and there is a substantial evidence that it is epidemic in many developing and newly industrialized countries. Complications from diabetes, such as coronary artery and peripheral vascular disease, stroke, diabetic neuropathy, amputations, renal failure, and blindness, are resulting in increasing disability, reduced life expectancy, and enormous health costs for virtually every society around the world. Diabetes is certain to be one of the most challenging health problems in the 21st century. Now, in choosing good food in place of insulin therapy, here's a story about a Pima Indian, the desert that surrounds the home of one man who has lived with diabetes for many years is quiet and serene. Nothing punctuates the silence during a September afternoon visit except the occasional barking of the family's friendly dog, who noses gently at visitors before flopping in the shade of the Palo Verde trees near the house. Now, he talks quietly about the children that he and his wife have raised, about the house that they built with the help of their relatives on the Gila River Indian Reservation, and about how he decided to change his diet for better health. Both of his parents had diabetes. Three of his brothers died from diabetes, and another brother is now on dialysis because of kidney disease caused by diabetes. This Pima Indian man remembers being diagnosed with diabetes while he was still in his 20s. And he says, "I didn't really notice it at first," he said softly. "I was young at the time. But 20 years later, he had to take notice. He had developed diabetic neuropathy, a complication of diabetes that affects the nerves and makes wounds slow to heal. His left leg had to be amputated in 1985 because of diabetes. He had to retire from the farm labor that he had done all of his life, and eventually he developed kidney problems. When he was told that he would have to go on dialysis, he and his wife met with a dietitian. "I just did what she told us," he says simply, "and when I had another appointment with the kidney doctor at the hospital, he looked at my chart and he said, 'What did you do?' 'You don't need to go on that machine yet,' he adds with a wide smile. What he did was just what the dietitian told him to do. He says, "I had to give up just about everything that I ate and then watch the amounts that I ate." Everything was really reduced. "He eats meat, but in small amounts, like they told me. Put two fingers together and just that much," he gestures, "two bites." He adds, laughing, "He learned to fill up on rice and lots of vegetables and to use other tips from the dietitian to control appetite and to eat healthier foods. The first 3 months, I'd really get hungry between meals, but the dietitian told me to just get a snack mid-morning and mid-afternoon, something light like an apple, and I kept on doing that. And now I don't have to take mid-morning and mid-afternoon snacks. I've gotten used to it," he explains. He can smile about it now because the rewards have been good. He went from weighing 250 pounds to a trim, thin leanness. His blood sugar, which had registered at 250, tested normal around 90. "Oh, I feel great. Whenever I just sit back and think about it, it just feels great," he says with great satisfaction. Despite his quiet personality, this is obviously a man who doesn't give up. His wife does all the cooking. His wife has been very essential, and she buys all the food, reads all the labels, and is careful about what she buys. "It was hardest to give up his favorite foods like fried bread and beans," he admits, "and sometimes he has eaten it when he was really hungry for it. For those occasions, his wife uses light oil, which reduces the fat. I didn't know controlling my diet would really make such a difference, but it really did," he says finally. Note the word fat, boys and girls. We're going to see that word quite often as we proceed along. Now, one in three Americans is at risk for diabetes. 6%, pushing 7% of the population, is now diagnosed with diabetes. 15% of the American population actually has diabetes. Half of them don't know it. Just like this man here, he had diabetes. He was diagnosed with diabetes. In this case, he knew he had it, but he lived as if there was no big deal until finally in 1985, it got so bad he had to have one of his legs amputated. Then he decided to take action. It seems to me a shame that he had to wait until one leg had to be amputated before he took action, but you know, that's the way most people are. Most people live their lives accidentally. They live where they live accidentally. They are employed in the employment that they're employed in accidentally. They do what they do. They eat what they eat. They live their lifestyle pretty much as an accident. It's the way it's always been. It's the way they always do it. Then some great trauma intercedes. A heart attack, a stroke, diabetes. Then a decision has to be made. Well, wouldn't it be better if we made those decisions, those determinations, before the crisis developed? I mean, do you have to wait until you have a heart attack before you make any meaningful changes, or could you do that before the heart attack occurred? It's almost like prophecy. Could you predict? Could you know in advance that you're probably going to develop diabetes or heart attack based upon your lifestyle today? Are there any waymarks along the way? Are we able to make those kinds of determinations? Well, the answer is absolutely. If you knew what caused heart attack, would you continue living the lifestyle that's going to ultimately produce it? If you knew what caused diabetes, would you continue that lifestyle until you developed diabetes? Would you continue on until one leg was amputated and then make the change, or would you make the change before the leg was amputated or before you went on kidney dialysis? Well, let's see. Because we can tell, we can describe it, we can show you what causes it. Now, as many as a third of American adults with type 2 diabetes don't even know that they have the disease. Now, that's according to alarming new findings from the National Institute of Health and the CDC. Even more disheartening, one in three adults in the U.S. either has diabetes or a pre-diabetes condition known as impaired glucose tolerance. So that means that 73 million Americans have the disease or are on their way to getting the disease, says Catherine Cowie, Ph.D. of the National Institute of Diabetes and Digestive and Kidney Disease. We knew that there had been an increase in diagnosed cases of type 2 diabetes, Cowie tells WebMed. The hope was that this rise would be counterbalanced by a decline in undiagnosed cases, but that is not what we are seeing. Well, let's pause right here. Let me take 73 and divide that by 300. And that gives us 24%. So about one person out of every four. So just look around the room. If there's four people in the room, one of you has diabetes or is in the process of developing it. You either have it right now or you're going to get it. One in four. Now, that's how bad this is. Now, it gets worse as we describe the disease because it cuts down on your lifestyle. If you've ever heard Joe Wallach's tape on Dead Doctors Don't Lie, the American medical doctor dies on average at age 58. Now, remember that medical doctors have all the drugs, all the knowledge of modern medicine at their disposal. Now, the average person in America dies at age 75. The average medical doctor dies at age 58, or about 17 years earlier than his prescribed lifespan, or his average lifespan. Now, under the Mosaic Law, we have a prescribed lifespan of 70 years, 80 years if you're strong, by law, by contract, by agreement, 25,550 days. If you are a diabetic, your average lifespan will be 57, 59, or 61 years, depending upon which class or category you fall into. So let's take a look at some of these categories. Cowie and her colleagues analyzed data from a national survey collected between 1999 and 2002, and they compared this data to data collected between 1988 and 1994. Now, the participants were asked if they had diabetes, and they were given fasting blood tests to confirm the diagnosis, identify new cases, and then to identify people with the pre-diabetes condition. So among the survey's main findings, the prevalence of diagnosed diabetes among adults in the U.S. rose from 5.1% in the early survey to 6.5% in the most recent one. The percentage of adults with undiagnosed diabetes remained fairly steady. A total of 2.7% of adults in the U.S. have the disease without knowing it. And almost one in four U.S. adults age 65 or over, 22% of elderly Americans, have diabetes. And diabetes was twice as common in blacks and Mexican Americans as it was in whites. Type 2 diabetes accounts for 95% of all diabetes cases, and virtually all undiagnosed cases of the disease, and obesity is a major risk factor for type 2 diabetes. Age, family history, and your sedentary lifestyle also contribute to your risk. Diabetes is the most common cause of blindness, kidney failure, and amputations among adults in the United States, and it is also a major risk factor for heart disease and stroke. In fact, as we proceed along, we'll find out that most people do not live long enough to die from diabetes. So diabetes is not going to be on your death certificate as the cause of death. In 65% of the cases of diabetes-caused death, your death certificate is going to record heart attack or stroke as the cause of death, or, in fewer cases, but many, it'll be kidney disease or some other peripheral disease which you died from but which was caused by the diabetes. So like AIDS that we talked about last week. Most people do not live long enough to die from AIDS. You're going to die from some other opportunistic infection like pneumonia or the flu. And your death certificate isn't going to say that you died from AIDS or complications of AIDS. You're going to die from pneumonia or some other peripheral disease. Now, prediabetes is not a benign condition. The analyzed data were taken from the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey conducted by the CDC, that's the Center for Disease Control, the National Center for Health Statistics. These agencies are the only national health survey to examine both diagnosed diabetes and undiagnosed disease, confirmed by physical examinations that include blood glucose testing. Over the years that were studied, 26% of adults in the United States had impaired fasting glucose, meaning that blood sugar levels were higher than normal after an overnight fast, but they were not high enough to be considered diabetes yet. This condition is also known as impaired glucose tolerance and pre-diabetes. Now, 26% of Americans have this condition. Left untreated or undiagnosed or ignored, it will develop into diabetes. Now, if you develop diabetes, your average lifespan, if you're under the age of 55, so if you're 55 years or younger and you are diagnosed with diabetes, your average lifespan will be 57 years. 57 years. That's less than the average American doctor who has a lifespan on average of 58 years. So the idea that if I get diabetes when I'm 15, 20, or 25 years old, it's no big deal because I will get on insulin and I will live my life happily ever after, is only partially true. I don't know so much about living life happily ever after, but your average lifespan will be shortened from 75 to 57 years if you're under the age of 55 when you develop the disease. Now, if you're over 55, over age 55, and you develop the disease, your average lifespan will be 59 years. Now, if you're already 65 or older, and you develop the disease, then you're going to die at about age 69, which will be about 6 years before your average lifespan decreases. So the later in life that you develop diabetes, the longer, obviously, your average lifespan. Now, if you don't develop diabetes, your average lifespan is going to be 75 years. If you do develop diabetes, you might actually beat the odds. A few people actually do that. And live to be 75 or 80 years old with diabetes. I remember my mother-in-law died at age 83. She had diabetes. But remember, we're not talking about everybody. We're talking about the mean average. The mean average. Now, cutting 17 years off of your lifespan is pretty significant, I would think. Pretty significant. Now, I don't have diabetes, and I live a lifestyle that is aimed at preventing diabetes. And if I develop it, I'm going to be very, very surprised, because there are solid, concrete steps that you can take right now. I don't care how old you are or what your physical condition. Even if you have diabetes right now, you can correct it and cure it. Not everybody, because some of you people are so degenerate, so far down the road to death that you can't be saved. But in general, you know, if you're average Joe Sixpack, you're 30 years old, you've been diagnosed with diabetes, you could probably beat that right now. Youth is on your side. You need to change your diet. And when we talk about diet, I'll show you with specificity what it is you need to eat and what you have to avoid. I can show you precisely what causes diabetes. It isn't a mystery. Doctors don't tell you. Because, you see, if the doctor tells you how to cure your diabetes with diet, then he beats himself out of a lot of commissions and fees, and he doesn't want to do that. If he can get you insulin dependent, he makes a lot of money off of you. If you're not insulin dependent, he doesn't make as much. And if you can be totally free from diabetes, then he doesn't make anything. So the choice is yours. It's one of those times in life when you make a choice. Now, you can wait. You do not have to take any action now. If you're that 1 in 4, that 25%, who is pre-diabetic, you can wait until you get the disease. And then you can struggle to overcome it. But as I showed you here with the Pima Indian man, it's a whole lot easier. And he says with great satisfaction, he reduced his weight from 250 pounds. And instead of going on kidney dialysis through diet, he totally reversed his diabetes. And although he lost a leg to diabetes, He did beat losing the other leg. He did beat death. He did beat the insulin and the diabetes dependence. But it would seem like to me that waiting until you get your leg cut off and until you're about to go on kidney dialysis is waiting a little bit too long. So before you get into that position, let's take a look at the 1 in 3 Americans who are at risk for diabetes and say, what can we do to change all of that? Now, over the year study, remember 26% of adults in the United States had impaired fasting glucose. That's your first stage. It's when your body is not able to produce enough insulin, or your body is developing a resistance to the insulin that you are producing. It has a cause. The pre-diabetes condition has no symptoms. You're not going to know that you have the symptoms unless you go in and get tested, because there's no outward symptoms of pre-diabetes. But Cowie points out that it is very far from being benign. Just because you don't have any symptoms doesn't mean that you're not impairing your body's organs. These people have a very high risk of developing diabetes within 10 years. Once you get to the point where you're pre-diabetic, within 10 years, you're at a very high risk of developing diabetes. And even if they don't, they're still at high risk for having a heart attack or a stroke. Now, you could have pre-diabetes, show no symptoms, and come down with a heart attack or a stroke, which have the same causes. Fat. Let me repeat that. Fat. Can you spell that, boys and girls? F-A-T. Fat. That's what causes diabetes. That's what causes heart attack and stroke. And you know, in the Bible, 3,000 years ago, God told Moses, write this down so you don't forget it. You shall eat no manner of fat in Leviticus 3, verse 17, and in Leviticus 7, verses 22 through 27, he gave us a second law, a second statute, and says, you shall eat no manner of fat. No. No. Can you write down the word no? Right after the word fat, F-A-T, write the word no. None, never, nada. Can you get that? No fat. No animal fat. You can't eat any animal fat. McDonald's hamburgers has 30% fat in the hamburger by law. And God told you, don't eat fat. Period. None. Zero. Zilch. Nada. Nothing. Have you got that? Okay. Now, Americans eat 247 pounds of red meat a year, of which approximately half of that is hamburger. Hamburger. Now, the other half isn't benign either, because you, if you're an average American, you eat a lot of lunch meat, like hot dogs, bologna. And hot dogs and bologna contain 40% fat. Now remember, God told you not to eat any fat, and you eat approximately 247 pounds, that's 250, so you're eating approximately 125 pounds of hamburger a year. 125 pounds. Now that's on average. Americans. Out of 125 pounds, let's just take 125 pounds, times 0.30, and that's 37.5 pounds of fat. That'd be like going to the butcher shop and buying 37.5 pounds and sitting down over the course of a year and consuming 37 pounds of just pure fat. Now, that's not the only source of fat, because you eat another jag of fat in your prepared lunch meats, primarily bologna and hot dogs. And then you eat another jag of fat on top of that when you eat steak or roast beef, and you eat that marbled fat in the meat. Okay, now tuck that one away in your heart here, boys and girls. Now, positive lifestyle changes can often prevent or delay the onset of diabetes in people with prediabetes, and study after study has shown that losing modest amounts of weight and getting even a moderate amount of exercise on a daily basis can make a big difference. Even doing something simple like walking 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week, can lower your risk, she says. And you ought to know the risk factors for type 2 diabetes. But people who don't know that they're at risk may be less inclined to make diabetes-preventing lifestyle changes. The list of potential risk factors is long, and people with any of the risks should discuss diabetes testing with their health care provider, the report concludes. The risk factors include having a family history of diabetes, being overweight, having an inactive lifestyle, meaning that they exercise less than 3 times a week, being a member of a high-risk ethnic population such as African American, Hispanic, Latino American, American Indian, Native Alaskan or Pacific Islander, and some Asian Americans, having high blood pressure, having low HDL cholesterol or high triglyceride levels, having a history of diseases of the blood vessels to the heart, brain, or legs, having had pregnancy-related diabetes, having polycystic ovary syndrome, or being age 45 and older. So if you're just age 45 and older, it's one of the risk factors for diabetes, assuming, of course, you live the average American lifestyle. The important message to get out to the community is that these are the people who are at risk for developing type 2 diabetes. Clark is a professor of medicine at Indiana University School of Medicine and is chairman emeritus of the NIDDK's National Diabetes Education Program. He tells WebMed, limited public health funds make both finding undiagnosed diabetes cases and taking care of people who know that they have the disease a challenge. We only have so much to invest, he says, and we may want to spend more on screening efforts, but the reality is that we may need to spend more taking care of the people we already know about. All right, so now let's take stock of where we're at so far. It tells us that one American out of four either has diabetes or is going to develop it. That's pretty significant. That's higher than AIDS. It's about as high as heart attack. Now, 37% of Americans who die this year are going to die from cardiovascular disease. 37%, a little over a third. When you die, you're going to die from cardiovascular disease. Many of those people who are dying from cardiovascular disease, that is heart attack and stroke, are actually dying from complications caused by diabetes. The real cause of your death should say diabetes on your death certificate, but it won't, because you're going to die from a heart attack, which is a complication. You're not going to live long enough to die from diabetes in 65% of the cases. So 65% of the heart attacks that go on in America are diabetes related. And heart attack is the number one killer in this country. Now, the truth of the matter is, if we were to take a look at diabetes in that vein, in all probability, diabetes is really the number one killer, and that heart attack is the methodology by which diabetes killed you. Hang on, let me give you a reminder that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives and can be accessed through the website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, tonight's topic, diabetes. One in three Americans are at risk for diabetes, and many have the disease and simply don't know it. That's the story. About one in three is at risk. About one in four is actually going to develop diabetes at some point in his life. If you develop diabetes under age 55, your lifespan will average 57. If you develop it at 45 to 55, you'll live to be 59. If you develop it at 55 or older, your average lifespan will be 61. So it's 57, 59, or 61. There's your three average lifespans. here in America. All right, 30-something people are in extreme risk of diabetes. Now, here you are in your 30s at the peak of your life and your lifespan. You've been hearing that type 2 diabetes is on the rise, and much attention has been focused on the dangers of the growing epidemic in children. Now, researchers who addressed the recent American Medical Association's diabetes briefing in New York are sounding the alarm. The alarm bells are now going off. I want to point out right here while I'm thinking about it that over the past 20 years, the consumption of soda pop has doubled in the United States. And the incidence of juvenile type 2 diabetes has doubled in the same 20 years. Did you get that? Now, almost all of you out there go to the store and you buy soda pop, you bring it home and you feed it to your children. You wouldn't think of bringing a six-pack of Budweiser home and feeding that to your children, but you feed them something that's more deadly. The beer won't cause diabetes in your children, but the soda pop will. And the reason for that is that your body can only digest, can only dispose of 3 teaspoons of refined sugar per day. Now, your creator, God, the guy, you know, that talked to Moses out at Mount Sinai, he developed a substance called honey, which is made up of a complex carbohydrate, as opposed to a simple carbohydrate. Your body can digest and assimilate honey, and you can't overdose on it if it's natural raw honey. It's a food. But refined sugar is a drug. And you're feeding your children this drug, and it makes them hyper, and then you bring them down with Ritalin. It's kind of a crazy scenario here in the United States. We bring soda pop home. 1 can of Coke, Pepsi, or these other soda pops, in addition to other chemicals like caffeine, they contain 9 to 12 teaspoons of sugar. Approximately 3 times more than their bodies can digest or assimilate. We should not wonder why we have diabetes. Now, I mentioned fat, F-A-T, so write that down. Okay, now write this down. Sugar, S-U-G-A-R, sugar. Here are the 2 causes for diabetes, sugar and fat. Just write that down. And then whatever else that you're doing over there is a peripheral item. It's a collateral issue. It's the sugar and fat. That's what's giving you diabetes. And that's why in the Bible, God 17 times told you that he was going to give you a land of milk and honey. Milk and honey. You stick to milk and honey, you'll be all right. I'm not talking about pasteurized milk out of Kroger's. I'm talking about raw milk out of the cow. I'm not talking about a chemical manufactured product. I'm not talking about some distillate product that came out of a manufacturing process falsely labeled milk. I'm talking about the product that comes out of a cow. And I'm not talking about, when I say sugar, I'm not talking about refined sugar from C&H. I'm talking about honey. I'm talking about the complex carbohydrate created by God when he gave you a land of milk and honey. You concentrate on drinking real milk and eating real honey, you won't get diabetes. Now, if you want to eat fat from McDonald's and you want to eat refined sugar from C&H, you know, then it's a choice that you have to make in life. And when you make the choice and you come down with diabetes, don't get mad at God and don't get mad at me. I'm just a reporter, remember? So you've been learning and you've been hearing about this type 2 diabetes. It's on the rise, and much attention has been focused on the dangers of the growing epidemic in children. So now researchers who addressed the recent American Medical Association's diabetes briefing in New York are sounding alarm bells about this new threat. And I'm a reporter, and I'm going to report to you the alarm bells. Type 2 diabetes traditionally has occurred much later in life, particularly in adults, at about middle age, says Lee S. Sanders, president of the Healthcare and Education for the American Diabetes Association. But now we're beginning to see it in children, and in those about 30, in their 30s, and it's very worrisome. It's worrisome, Sanders tells WebMed, because diabetics, or diabetes, carries an increased risk of heart disease and stroke. Too many people don't make that connection, that heart attacks, strokes, and eventually blindness and kidney failure can result from diabetes. In fact, children and young adults, including 30-somethings, will likely begin having these middle-aged health problems much earlier, probably around age 40, Sanders and other experts agree. Of the two common types of diabetes, type 2 diabetes has long been known as an adult disease. It typically develops gradually after age 40, when the body becomes less sensitive to insulin. Insulin is a hormone that is the key regulator of the body's metabolism. Type 2 diabetics seem incapable of producing enough insulin to overcome this insulin resistance. An estimated 16 million people in the United States alone and 100 million people worldwide have diabetes, and about half are unaware that they have it. All right, now, notice that there's some discrepancies here in our statistics and our numbers. The discrepancy here is they say, well, about 100 million. I read to you another article over here said about 194 million people around the world have it. I want you to notice the number about half here in this article say they don't know that they have it. Another article said, no, that it's more like about 30%. Well, I don't know what the numbers are either. And I'm not sure that anybody else knows with certainty exactly what the numbers are. But all you got to do is just use your head and just take a mean average. You know, one group over here says, well, our studies indicate to us, and our numbers say, we think that it's about 100 million. Another group says, no, I think it's about 200 million. One group says, we think about one-third of Americans don't know that they have it. Another group says, we think it's about one-half. Now, notice I showed you here that in some racial groups, like black Americans and Latin Americans, the incidence of diabetes is two or three times what it is among whites. Now, many times people will say, well, it's genetics. Well, I don't deny that it's genetics. I don't know. I'm a reporter, not a medical doctor. But I'm smart enough to know that if you're talking genetics, you're also talking about families' eating habits. Now, I had a family. My first wife was very fond of hamburger. Very, very fond of hamburger. She was overweight. Her family had a history of diabetes. And she liked those char-broiled burgers, Burger King burgers. She really liked those. And so do I. They're really tasty. I don't deny that Burger King makes probably the best hamburger that can be made. Unfortunately, those hamburgers, the hamburger that Burger King and McDonald's, and I'm not blaming Burger King or McDonald's now, for the fat content in the hamburger, that's caused by your state legislature. The state legislature listens to the meatpacking industry, and they come into the legislature and say, we need a law enacted which allows us to put 30% fat into the hamburger. And so they don't want to put this out as known as the fat law. They don't want to put a law out that says, from henceforth, all hamburgers shall contain 30% fat, so that the meatpacking industry can get rid of all that gooey slop that nobody wants to eat. See, that isn't good merchandising. So what they do is they word the law like this. If any meat packer, wholesaler, or retailer shall put more than 30% fat into the hamburger, he shall be guilty of a misdemeanor and fined not more than $300 or jailed not more than 1 year in the county jail. Now, that makes consumers feel like the legislature is working in our best interests. The meatpacking industry is just doing their best to help us. And everybody ignores the fact, including the preachers, that God Almighty himself says, don't eat any fat. None. Zero. Zilch. Nada. Never. Don't eat fat. Period. You go to the dentist and he says, watch your sweets. Watch your sugar intake. He doesn't tell you, don't eat sugar. Don't eat refined drug sugar. He says, just watch it. He doesn't tell you how much is too much or how much is enough. He just says, watch it. So when you walk out of the dentist's office, you haven't got a clue as to how much sugar you should or should not be eating. And the dentist knows full well that it tastes good and you want to eat more of it. Just like Burger King hamburger. It tastes real good and you want to eat more of it. Unfortunately, it contains fat. And that fat's what's causing this diabetes outbreak. The diabetes epidemic. Fat. Now, there's some other contributing causal factors, as we'll see as we progress along, and there's some dyed-in-the-wool, tried-and-true diets that you can use to avoid it, or to cure it if you got it. But it's a hell of a lot easier to avoid it than it is to get rid of it after you've got it. And once you get it, boys and girls, and I'm going to point this out to you right now, once you get on insulin, you're going to be on insulin for the rest of your life. With few exceptions. There's a couple of exceptions. There's always that exception to the rule. But there's another thing over here called CoQ10. We'll take a look at that when we get to that article. A lot of times you're not insulin deficient, you're CoQ10 deficient. The doctor, however, says that you're diabetic, and he says you got to get on insulin. And once he gets you on insulin, which now is a drug, your pancreas shuts down, doesn't produce any insulin. Now you got to be on insulin all your life. Now, if you avoid the insulin and you follow the biblical admonitions concerning fat and blood and clean and unclean meats, we'll take a look at the vitamins and the minerals and the lifestyle changes that the doctors recommend and the diets. And, you know, the whole thing is actually a lifestyle change. It's relatively easy to avoid diabetes. Relatively easy to avoid. It's like cancer. It's relatively easy to avoid cancer. It's relatively easy to avoid heart attack. But, you know, once you get cancer, it's a tough one to get rid of. Not impossible, just tough. You know, once you get cardiovascular disease, not impossible to get over it, but it's tough. It's so much easier to avoid it. Now, most of us have already got it. Those of us that don't have it aren't concerned about it. You can't teach an old dog that don't want to learn none. So, young people don't want to learn, so there's not much you can do for them. Those of you that already have it, it's too late to prevent it. So now you have to go through the pain, the suffering, and the anguish that goes along with it. But when you get through, you'll say, well, it would have been a lot easier to have avoided it. I think that's the bottom line. Now, children over here are developing diabetes because they are on sugar at an earlier and earlier age. When I was a kid, a Coca-Cola was 6 ounces, and you got maybe a Coke once a month, maybe. I might have got a dozen a year. If you're drinking 6 ounces of Coke once a month, you probably will never develop diabetes. But Americans are drinking, on average, 1.8 cans. That's 1.8 times 12. Let's see what that is. 12 ounces in a can. Oh, it's just rounded off to 2 cans. It's 24 ounces less, a couple ounces. So you're talking about 22 ounces a day. A day. Now, that's about 16 teaspoons of sugar a day. Now, the average kid in America, it's primarily children drinking all this Coke. And they don't drink two. See, mom and dad drink one. The kids drink four. Averages out to around two a day per person in the United States. Now, these children, their body's metabolism can only dispose of 3 teaspoons of sugar, and they're taking in 16 a day. 16, that's minimum. The average, minimum. 16 a day. You should not be surprised that your kid is bouncing off the walls and needs Ritalin to calm down in the school. If your kid's on Ritalin, take him off sugar and he won't need the Ritalin. And the Ritalin is designed to turn him into a drug addict for the pharmaceutical companies. And so if you want your kid to turn into a drug addict, well, you got him on the right track. Keep after it. If, on the other hand, you want to get him off drugs, the first drug to get him off of is sugar. Sugar is a drug. A drug is a chemical that's manufactured. That's what sugar is. So it's a manufactured chemical falsely called food. It's added to food. Makes food taste real good. But your liver can only dispose of about 3 teaspoons of refined sugar a day. It can take care of a lot more sugar if it's in the form of honey. Raw honey with the enzymes. Now, tuck this one away in your heart, boys and girls, because once sugar is heated above 132 degrees, it kills the digestive enzymes in the honey, which means now your body can't digest it. And all of this commercial honey that you buy in the grocery store has been heated and filtered. There isn't any nutritional value. It's probably not even 100% honey. It's probably 51% honey and 49% corn syrup, which is more refined sugar. So the honey that you're buying in the grocery store is probably as bad as or worse than the refined white death that you're buying in the powdered form. Probably. Not all, but probably most of it. To get honey, you have to buy it raw, unfiltered, strained but unfiltered, and unheated. Or at least if it's heated, it's got to be below 132 degrees. So if you buy the sugar and it's already sugared, or I mean you buy the honey and it's already sugared and it's hard, then you know it has not been heated. That's the way you tell if it's been heated. If it sugars, it's raw. So tuck that one away in your hearts. Now we got honey and we got sugar. We've got raw sugar and we've got refined sugar. We've got soda pop use, and soda pop, 2 cans a day on average per person in the United States. And if you take 2 cans of sugar, now let's just test this, 2 cans of sugar, or 2 cans of soda pop, let's just take 2 times 365 times 9 is 6,570 teaspoons of sugar. And that's just from that source of sugar. Let me run that one by you again. Take 2 cans of soda pop times 9. Now, let's see. Yeah, 9 and 9 is 18. 2 times 9 teaspoons in a can is 18 teaspoons of sugar a day times 365 days is 6,570 teaspoons. Now, how many teaspoons of sugar can your body digest in a year's time? Well, the answer is 3 times 365, or about 1,095, or 1,100. So you're taking into your body around 5,000 teaspoons of sugar, more than your body can dispose of. And that's what's causing your childhood diabetes. It's not the only cause, because hamburger and fat are the second big one. Now, the CDC report finds that between 1990 and 1998, now this is an 8-year period, 1990 to 1988, there was a 70% increase in diabetes among those in the 30 to 39 age bracket and 40% increase in the 40 to 49 bracket, and the number of children developing diabetes is dramatically rising. Now, here's an issue, the weight problem. The family history has long been thought to put people at risk for type 2 diabetes, but obesity Even modest weight gain is also said to be an important risk factor. All right, so let me give you another number here to jot this one down. If you are obese, and that is if you're fat, not just overweight, but fat, not only is your lifespan reduced, let's say you're 27 years old, then you weigh 250 to 300 pounds, assuming you're not 6'19", and you're categorized as being obese, now and you're in your 30s now. Take another 8 years off your lifespan. Another 8 years comes off. From an average of 57, you're down to 49. If you're 22 years old, you're obese, and you have diabetes, you can expect to die by age 49 on average. Boys and girls, you know, if you're a sodomite and you're practicing sodomy, you can expect to die on average at age 45. Unless you get AIDS, in which case you can expect on average to die at age 39. These lifestyle changes that we make, or the lifestyles that we choose, actually amount to life or death. You know that? Think about it. Life and death. Eating at McDonald's is a life and death decision. Drinking Coca-Cola is a life and death decision. It's a decision that you make every day. It isn't going to kill you within 5 minutes of eating a Big Mac. You're not going to die within 24 hours of drinking a Coca-Cola. But as you continue on through your lifestyle, year after year, year after year, it's going to take 17 to 25 years off of your allotted lifespan. Now that's from 75 is the average American lifespan. You're entitled to 75. And diabetes is growing by leaps and bounds. Just like AIDS, growing by leaps and bounds. And diabetes is not a communicable disease. It's not something that you pick up from Flo's whorehouse. And you're not going to get diabetes by going to bed with a whore that has diabetes. It's purely a medical problem. It's not a legal problem like AIDS. It's a medical problem. You create it yourself. You do it to yourself. Now, we've probably got about 20 articles here. I'm running out of time. And as I go through here, I'm going to give you the numbers and the facts and the figures and the statistics. Here's that number again. Take a look around the room. Count the number of people in the room. In the course of your lifetime, 1 out of 4 of the people in that room are going to develop diabetes. Diabetes is going to shorten your lifespan to 57, 59, or 61 years on average, depending upon the group that you're in. Those are gruesome facts. All right, we're just about out of time. Let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.